I am Plant on the Line in Vancouver at thecommentary.ca. One of the more powerful films you'll see is The Apology, the documentary from Tiffany Cheung. The award-winning National Film Board production had two screenings in Vancouver this past weekend, and you can still catch it in Toronto at the Hot Ducks Ted Rogers Cinema. It's playing to the end of the week, and at the Tuesday and Thursday screenings, Cheung will be taking questions from the audience. The film looks at the journeys of three women, three grandmothers, who, after some 70 years after World War II, are seeking a formal apology from the Japanese government for their enslavement as so-called comfort women. There were some 200,000 girls throughout Asia kidnapped and violently raped by the Imperial Japanese Army. This film follows Grandma Gill from South Korea, Grandma Cao in China, and Grandma Adela in the Philippines. What Tiffany has done in this film is revealed the brutality they faced, as well as the painful path to finding the courage to tell their stories publicly, not to mention their families. The film is heartbreaking and moving, but also uplifting, as you see these three elderly women finally reveal their past and how they rededicate themselves to making sure future generations do not forget this horrific time in human history. The Apology is produced by Anita Lee and had its premiere at the 2016 Hot Docs Festival, where it received good notices, among them raves from the Globe and Mail and the Hollywood Reporter, and it's gotten a few awards already. Tiffany Cheung is a graduate from Ryerson, where she studied film production. She received the Norman Jewison Award for Excellence in Filmmaking. Her award-winning short film Binding Borders was screened internationally and propelled her to direct the RCI-CBC six-part miniseries on the Beijing Olympic Games, A New Face for Beijing. The Twitter handle is @theapologydoc. Soon you'll be able to see this film on demand, and I'm sure from iTunes. Do see it. It's such a good film. Please welcome to the Plant Online program in person today, Tiffany Cheung. Ms. Cheung, good morning.
Good morning. Thank you for having me.
Thanks for coming in to do this. I appreciate it. So how did you first encounter these women? I mean, did you have to do a lot of research in terms of finding the right people to talk to?
You know, this was a very unexpected journey that started in 2009, where I was actually introduced to the subject matter, and I think that's what really propelled me to want to make this film, was is that I never heard about this part of our history when recalling World War II in Asia specifically. It was never something that was taught to me in school or passed down to my family. So it's something that was really shocking to me once I heard about this, and I was brought brought to the subject matter through an organization, Alpha Education, and their mandate is to bring North American educators to Asia to actually show them the places and meet survivors of the various atrocities there. And that's when I met the grandmothers. So I was documenting teachers learning about this, but at the same time I was learning about this, and that just threw me on a whirlwind. And after those first two initial weeks of listening to testimonies after testimonies, I decided I need to stay longer, mm-hmm. and I wanted to meet the grandmothers outside of the conference room. So I made a lot of phone calls, got connected through the organization, and they put me connected to other people that worked with the survivors down in their communities. Mm-hmm. And one thing led to another, and because I was by myself, traveling alone, I think it was very unobtrusive and if anything, quite interesting that I was just by myself and was very interested in hearing their stories. So that's how everything started in 2009, just like the initial learning of this and research of this. And then I met over, like, I guess, over 35, 40 survivors since I started. And I think the natural relationships that I started, you know, getting with each of the grandmothers and the way that I related to them and the way that I felt this connection with naturally brought me to focus on Grandma Gill, Grandma Adela, and Grandma Cao.
Yeah, they're remarkable women, each of them. And what struck me in watching the film was how likable they are. and I guess off camera, what you see on camera is what you get. Is that right?
Yeah. I mean, grandmothers in general are pretty likable people.
They are, yeah.
Yeah, so, and these grandmothers are just exceptional people, and everything that they have survived through and continue to survive through I'm just in awe. You know, when you're around them, it's infectious, their energy, and so, but each grandmother is so unique, you know. Mm-hmm. Grandma Gill, you ask yourself, like, how long will you continue doing this? How far will you go? And often the answer from her would be, till the day I die.
Yeah, and so that grandmother in particular, someone that you followed through, mm-hmm. you traveled with her, you met her, of course, in South Korea. You traveled with her to Japan. I mean, the film opens with well, we'll talk about that in a sec, but then you go with her to Europe, to the United Nations, and she goes around speaking to people, mm-hmm. giving speeches, giving her testimony to people who listen. But to that initial scene in the movie, in the early part of the movie, where you're in Japan with her, and I guess she's walking to their version of Parliament.
Yeah.
And you have these protesters who are yelling these terrible, horrifying things at her.
Mm-hmm.
What's that like for you to watch?
It was hard. I mean, that editing process was difficult because I was screaming over on the other camera, and because it's walking behind her, and I was screaming back at them. So it was definitely a very challenging moment. It was the first that I've ever seen and was part of, but it wouldn't be the last.
Yeah.
It's hard to see, because especially since you see young people in that crowd screaming, and it's a particular group. It's right-wing nationalist extremist protesters, mm-hmm. and even though at that moment I don't know what they're saying because I don't speak Japanese, I can tell, obviously, I can tell that it's obviously really horrific things.
Yeah.
And in that moment, you just want to protect the grandmothers. You just want to protect them and hold them and not have those words penetrate them and scar them, mm-hmm. any more than they have been scarred over these years. So it was definitely difficult to walk through. And then the more I've stayed and visited Japan and realized that this group actually, you know, there's this group that follows them around at every public event that they're at. And so it becomes almost unfortunately normal to see them.
Yeah, I mean, and she conducts herself with such dignity, not only mm-hmm. there, but, you know, throughout the film we see all of these ladies,
mm-hmm.
these three ladies. And I guess there's a great lesson in their lives that we can all take from this.
Absolutely. I mean, there's so many layers of lessons that you can draw from, specifically to their strength and their resilience and how they hold themselves and the power of the human spirit. I mean, these women, even after everything that they have gone through, they've, beyond just surviving, they've made a life. Grandma Gill remarkably raised a son, mm-hmm. you know, put him through school, and he's done very well for himself.
He's a reverend, right?
He's a reverend.
Yeah.
And you see that intimate moment between the two of them, and you see the amount of respect the son has for her. And essentially, her love allowed them to survive.
Yeah.
And I think that, I mean, aside from heroes, these women to me are heroes, you know?
Yeah.
They are beyond survivors. They're absolute heroes to me. And I think that they can teach us a lot about this cycle of silence that continues in our society, this need to breaking that, and this need to starting more dialogues amongst our own families. To me, that's always been a very important aspect of, like, my own interest was, why is it easier to tell a stranger about your story versus your own family members, and how does one stay silent for over six decades after the war, and how that must feel. And you see that in their stories, you see how they still carry that, you know, even though Grandma Chow's daughter now knows far more details of what happened to her mother. Till this day, they've never had a direct one-on-one conversation. And they never will.
Yeah.
They never will. And with Grandma Adela, same thing. It's like you saw how much it ate her up with not being able to tell her husband, and just to be able to go on that journey to explore telling, you know, her son.
Yeah.
It's remarkable. It's remarkable even at that age, you know, that carries through. But that change is possible, and that you and yourself can actually, I don't know, I think it can be really inspiring to a lot of young people out there that, you know, feel this weight of shame or silencing that they feel like they have to be, with fear that they'd be disowned by their own families. I think that these grandmothers can inspire us all to come out with our own stories.
So in the film, you mentioned Adela, and she's in the Philippines, and she her husband has died, and so he goes to his grave not knowing what happened to her, and she explains why she didn't tell him. And so she tells you on camera before she even tells her son, right?
Mm-hmm.
And you film the process of her telling her family about this?
Yeah.
Yeah. And in your conversations with these three women, you felt that you could ask them anything, right?
Not in the first few years. I think it's like any real relationship you have with people, you know, you need to get to know one another. I mean, my process with this film was as much as they were willing to share with me, I was also sharing with them me, who I am, what I've gone through, who my family was, and not just with the grandmothers, but with the family members and with the organizations that are like the grandmother's family, like in Korea. You know, it's important. Relationships was everything to this film, and it needed to take as long as it did to obtain the trust. Because,
mm-hmm.
I don't know, I, like any human relationship, I wouldn't feel comfortable asking something so private and so intimate without knowing them.
Yeah.
You know, I don't look at myself like going in this as in a very journalistic approach.
Uh-huh.
It was really an exploration and getting to know somebody. And and in that way, I wanted the audience also to get to know them as well.
Yeah, and then you see the culture and how different Asian culture is to Western culture. And there's this line that you have to get over in terms of getting their trust, getting them to speak, overcoming the reticence to speak. Is that why it took a little longer, perhaps?
Culturally, I mean, I can only speak to, like, growing up in a Chinese family. I definitely seen and experienced that firsthand, uh-huh. that, you know, talking about sex and anything to do with sex is completely taboo, you know, in the family. Which then obviously makes it incredibly hard to speak about, you know, the things that you've experienced or wanting just an ear to listen to you. And so I think in China was incredibly difficult because community members and just in that small village, people were not the most supportive.
Yeah, and they tell you that they don't want to, this is not something that they would want to hear even.
Exactly,
yeah.
Exactly. But over the years, I just, like, they just saw me as, you know, like the adopted granddaughter that always comes to visit like 3-4 times a year. So it became almost normal,
yeah.
and it became almost natural and okay to talk about these things. And it's almost like every time I came into the village, it was a reminder of, you know, the history. And to not, for me, I try to look in their perspective, and it's like, I see why they, it's not something that they want to talk about. But at the same time, when I think about Grandma Chow and her stoic silence and like, being like, you know what, I don't need to talk about this. I don't need to share this with my daughter or mm-hmm. my granddaughter. I can just be alone at this. And there is an incredible amount of strength in doing that, that's self-imprisonment. However, do I think it's fair that she has to do that? Absolutely not.
Mm-hmm.
I wish more people can sit with her, let her share whatever she wants to share, if she has anything to share at all, right?
Mm-hmm.
But to give her that choice, to give her that space, I think it's a things that society and community members need to do and are responsible in doing, because it's bad enough that they've gone through all these atrocities, but to feel like you can't even talk about it because of the people around you, I think, and to live like that for a lifetime,
mm-hmm.
like it's so unnecessary. And change can happen, because it's still happening today. I mean,
yeah.
it's not, grandmothers are not the only ones dealing with it. Chinese people are not the only ones dealing with it.
Yeah.
Everyone in their own community, in their own way that they deal with it, are still having a difficult time to be able to talk to their own families about their own atrocities. And I think it's just really powerful to see how they try to overcome that, or how their slow journeys in doing that, even
yeah.
at their age. And that's why I think the objective of making this film for us was to really focus on that human spirit and that their power and resilience.
At the same time, while you're making this film, do you understand why the Japanese government And some Japanese people are unwilling to address this, unwilling to apologize.
Well, on the note of apologies, you know, the Japanese government has issued over the course of the last two decades various versions of an apology. Some of them were personal. Some of them were not. Listen, an apology really comes with responsibility and following actions that show that, you know, you are truly sorry. And it's just unfortunate that everything that has been put out publicly hasn't really taken into the grandmother's demands and considerations. It's all been negotiated in the back room between two governments versus actually listening to what the survivors wanted all this time. And the journey still continues for them, and we hope one day that there can be a resolve. But at the same time, I think a big part of what the grandmothers want is education, is this history to be documented in history textbooks and taught to the next generation, is to have a museum that actually holds their stories and that honors them, and so that this doesn't happen again in history, you know. And since they've been fighting for the last over 25 years, they haven't gotten that. And so it continues. Their fight still continues to this day.
To the point of education, there's a scene in the film where Grandma Gill goes to it's a school in Japan, right?
Yeah, a Japanese all-girl university.
Yeah, and so she tells her story. She speaks to the class, and then they get up, I guess, in a question and answer form, and it's so moving. I guess there is hope there, isn't there? When you see these young women just burst into tears.
Absolutely, that was such a remarkable day, because actually that day I remember Grandma Gill wasn't feeling so great, and I felt like after, because she was doing so many different conferences, but the moment I think when she's able to address a younger generation and she sees that there is hope and that there is, you know, the stories and passing on that she can see change and she can see that light. And a little story, when we were in Toronto, Grandma Gill was at our screening for a world premiere.
Yeah.
And it was amazing. It was the first time she's actually watched a movie in a theater. So
really?
It was remarkable that she was watching. First film she was watching was a story of herself. And it's great because, you know, her memory is fading, as you can see in the film. And so all the things that happened in everything that we've documented and shown in the movie are things that she had completely forgotten. And to re-engage her with her own strength or her own story and to show again to her if she had forgotten just how strong she is one of the most remarkable things. And I remember while she was in Toronto, she went to a high school again. She went to a Toronto high school, and it was about like 300-400 students there, and they're listening to her talk, and we show some clips from the film, and then everyone leaves the auditorium, and this one like 14-15-year-old Japanese student, this young boy, and there's like five of us there with Grandma Gill, and he walks up to Grandma and he says, I am a Japanese Canadian. And he does this deep, deep bow, and he says to her, I'm sorry. And she grabs him, tries to get him out of the bow, and hugs him. And she said, you're not the one that needs to be sorry, but thank you. And she hugs him, and his eyes are red, very like about to be in tears. And he walks away, and he turns around again, and he does a second deep bow and says he's sorry again. And then he walks away. And we were just all in utter shock, you know. And that, to me, that's the hope. And that's why it's so important that the younger generation knows this, because they show us that this isn't about who's right and who's wrong. You know,
they get what this is about and what they need to get out of this.
Exactly.
Yeah. It's a wonderful moment for you, you know, a rewarding moment, a gratifying moment, if you will, the one that you just described. But I mean, the toll personally, back to that, because I mean, we started the conversation about the yelling in Japan,
mm-hmm.
that you had to go through. I mean, this is a long 7 years for you, isn't it?
Yeah, from first learning about this to meeting the grandmothers and the whole process to then production and then a lot of time in post-production editing over 400 hours of footage to making the hour and 44-minute film.
Yeah.
It has been a very long journey, yes.
But because I read in some of the press on the film, you had your own personal issues to deal with. I mean, did that, people can look that up and see what that's about. But I mean, what was that like for you then to have to deal with their trauma and then perhaps some stuff from your past?
You know, it's, at the end of the day, I think.
Because at the same time too, pardon me, we're all talking about Gomeshi. We're talking about Bill Cosby. We're talking about all these things, you know.
Mm-hmm.
In our popular culture, if you will, in the news.
Yeah, I think that is definitely a part of my, I don't want to call it like healing journey, but it was my own process of drawing strength from them, and I was definitely going through my own struggles and dealing with my own traumas of sexual abuse. And I think being with the grandmothers, it changes you, you know, drawing so much strength from them. That's what they do. They give you that strength to continue and to understand why this is so important, why their stories are so important, and why it's so important to tell their stories and to give them that platform to do so. Because I'm not as old as they are, obviously, and for them to have gone through so many decades upon decades without the support,
mm-hmm.
and without the chance to be able to share their stories and to just kind of try to lock it away, bury it, or however they were trying to, I guess, forget it if they could. I just thought that it was, when I first met them, that how unfair that was.
Mm-hmm.
And obviously giving my own, you know, relating back to everything that I've gone through, then it's even more frustrating,
mm-hmm.
because it happens to all of us. The point of like, I'm just going to keep this to myself. Everyone goes through that thought process is maybe I should just keep this to myself because there's no good in coming out. It's only traumatic afterwards. And there are several grandmothers that still feel that way. And there are several survivors today that haven't come out because of that thought. And so for me, I mean, I've been able to openly talk about my own story and been able to share that. And I'll obviously hope that it too can inspire people to find that strength inside to tell their own stories. I've had a few people and audiences, you know, share with me their own stories after watching the grandmothers. And these are like people in their 50s, 60s, 70s mm-hmm. coming up to me and being like, you know, I've always had something that I wanted to share with my family but never had the courage. And I thought that I could just bury it inside. But watching these women, watching these grandmothers, I think I'm going to have to rethink that, you know, and I think that's so amazing.
Mm-hmm.
And I share this with the grandmothers when I go back to Asia, like to try to communicate with them and let them know how powerful they are. So like during our world premiere, I was able to take messages back to them and they were able to see it. And they're able to just see how many people their stories are resonating with. And that's incredible. It's so rare, I think, that especially for documentary subjects, especially from really far away, to ever reap the rewards of seeing the audience and seeing that love.
Mm.
And and change. And it's so powerful, and I see it. I see it at every screening, and I take that, and I imprint it in my mind, take some photos, try to get people to share some messages, and I bring it back to them physically because they don't have internet, and it's not going to get to them.
You're not texting with them or anything.
I can't be texting them, so yeah. I physically bring it to them, and that's necessary. That's very necessary, and they deserve to see what their stories are doing.
How long into the process, these 7 years, did you feel that it became a not just making a movie, but you now have a responsibility here, not only to them, but other people?
Yes, there is lots of pressure. There is that pressure, but I think I made a decision a long, long time ago, probably 3 years in. There have been many moments where I'm just like, I don't think I can do this any longer. Mm-hmm. Mainly because of this feeling like, can I share their story and give it the justice that it deserves? Like, it needed to be the best. And there was a fear that it couldn't be that, you know, or what if the self-doubt, you know, and when there was that moment, in those periods of times where that happened, I had really great people around me to mentor me, to guide me, really experienced filmmakers that supported me throughout all of this. Amazing producer, Anita Lee, amazing editor, Mary Stevens, and just a great crew of people that were able to make this film what it is today. And so, I mean, a lot of the moments of self-doubt and stuff, you know, this film is bigger than me, bigger mm-hmm. than my own ego, bigger than my own insecurities of not getting it perfect. You know, this isn't a film where I explore my creativity and do, you know, all these things that I want to do in a film. And it's even though it's my first film, and usually you guys kind of like want to put everything out there in your first film, this one is, yeah, as much as it is my first film, it's all of ours, and it's really the grandmother's number one.
Yeah.
And so that made me overcome a lot of the obstacles and fear and the weight of responsibility. It was like, I don't know, in this Chinese saying, there's like, I like this duty. It's your duty. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I grew up believing that we all have a duty in this world, and for the last 7 years, this was mine.
So we started the conversation, you know, about these three women, and you know, you said that they're like all grandmothers, and so what I got out of this was like all grandmothers. They're making sure that you have something to eat,
yeah.
Make sure that you have food, dancing, music, laughter. I mean,
yeah,
these are important things to have in spite of everything.
In spite of everything. Very important, and very important to recognize and to see that. You know, I think humanizing such a story of unimaginable, you know, atrocities, we need to see the human aspects of all of this in order to connect to it. Otherwise, it's one of those things where you are able to like keep at arm's length and be like, oh yeah, that was really horrible back then. That was that, you know,
mm-hmm.
And that's it. That's where it stays. But to bring the grandmothers and who they are today to the forefront of this film, the forefront of this issue of these atrocities, that's how we can truly understand what they've gone through and truly understand the horrors of these atrocities. And to truly understand their human spirit. And it's important to do all of that, because otherwise we don't learn anything. Otherwise we don't take away to our heart what they've gone through, because you just keep it at distance.
Mm-hmm.
The moment you could see your own grandmother in these women's eyes, the moment you could see your own mother, you could see yourself, that connection is powerful, and we have been receiving that at every screening, and I'm so excited, and like a couple hours we'll be showing it in Vancouver, and I hope the audience too will also have that same resonance as well.
Yeah. So you're crisscrossing the country talking about this film. Mm-hmm. I know you're being asked this a lot because it's such a good movie as well. What the next thing will be? I mean, are you thinking about that already?
You know, I was supposed to make this other film before I started this film. Like this is this film just came like it just it wasn't something that I had sought out to do. It was something that I heard, and like anyone felt the responsibility to do something about it. So it's very different than like trying to find your next, you know, project and subject that you want to make a documentary about. That wasn't the case with The Apology. The Apology was made out of passion, love, and responsibility. But the film that I was supposed to make, I guess now 12 years ago, I'm going to go back to that. Actually, I think it's quite interesting how that film will now be kind of like a prequel to The Apology. Is that like what Star Wars or did, like The Return of the Jedi or something like that? it's a story. I think the working title right now is called Sing Me a Lullaby, but it's a journey of me finding my own grandmother.
Yeah.
And because my mom was given up at a very young age and she had never returned back to Taiwan, and I go on this hunt and search for her birth parents and to uncover that history. And I think after that personal journey and that uncovering and of that story, I see the importance of understanding our history, understanding the foundation of our own ancestors and our own parents and what they've gone through. You know, to truly appreciate what we have today. And I know that's kind of like a typical, you know, way of my upbringing, which is like, oh, you should appreciate what you have. You don't know what I've gone through, you know, like that whole thing. I grew up with that, but it's absolutely 100% true. You know, I think that, it's going to be an interesting story. And developing right now it's challenging. It's very personal.
Couple of things I was just thinking about, because you've traveled a great deal, not only to promote the film, but in the making of the film throughout Asia.
Mm-hmm.
You must learn how to pack light, do you?
You know what? I'm a horrible packer right now. I'm still a horrible packer. I overpack, and then if I want to bring anything back, I'm just like, yeah, I'm the worst packer out there. You would think that I've managed to I haven't mastered that after all these years. I have still overpacked. Or actually on this one trip, I underpacked and somehow didn't pack enough clothes because I was just trying to, you know, compensate by overpacking all the time. Yeah. So.
We all do that, don't we? Yeah. The other thing I was wondering, you're a filmmaker. And so I'm not a filmmaker, but as you can tell, I'm a big fan of movies.
Yes.
What do you like watching? And because you're in documentary films, one assumes that at an early age that had some effect on you. Did it?
No, I actually don't watch documentaries.
Really?
Some of my favorite films are docs, but I really grew up watching a lot of drama. You know, grew up watching In the Mood for Love, Eat, Drink, Man, Woman.
Yeah.
You know, like, I've fallen in love with storytelling. Not necessarily documentaries. It's only later on in my life that I've fallen in love with, you know, being able to capture real life and people. And very much character-driven films, character-driven documentaries, like this one, The Apology, follows them on their journey. And so, yeah, I can't say that I watched a lot of docs growing up. It's only in the last, I would say, the last decade, I probably watched a lot more docs.
Well, you've added something to this genre with your film, not only in this country, but I think when people see this film,
mm-hmm.
they'll see a way of telling stories that they may not have thought of telling stories before. And so congratulations on it. It's been a pleasure to talk to you and an honor for you to come in here and talk about this. All the best.
Thank you so much for having me.
You're very welcome. The Twitter handle at The Apology Doc, the film is called The Apology. Do see it. It's still in Toronto, so our friends in Toronto who are listening can see this through the end of the week. And when it's out on Twitter and on demand and all that, you do buy it. And if it is hitting a screen near you, see it, because it's such a moving, powerful film. It moved me a great deal. Tiffany Cheung joined me in person here in Vancouver. I'm Joseph Planta.